Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the edge of the prairie, summer coming to an end and fall is about to begin. The nights are getting cool and sunset coming earlier and earlier. And in the morning, there's fog, mist out on the lake, and we can feel it. We can feel it coming. It's this sweet time of year. People are fertilizing their lawns, and the farmers are out cutting corn stalks for silage. The soybeans are about ready to come in. People are working in their gardens. They're harvesting the carrots and the onions and the beets, beet greens. What a beautiful supper beet greens make. You just fry them up a little bit, just boil them ever so slightly, serve them with butter and with tomatoes, fresh tomatoes direct from the garden. You can serve them with sugar, you can put a little vinegar on them. People eat them in different ways. What a privilege to have your own homegrown tomatoes and sweet corn on top of it. Sweet corn from your own field, 10 minutes from the stalk to the platter on the table. You are among the privileged of the earth. Does the Obama family have fresh sweet corn? I doubt this very much. Does Pope Francis have it? I don't think so. Taylor Swift, does she eat fresh sweet corn? I don't know. I've got my doubts. The difference between homegrown fresh sweet corn or tomatoes and day 2 week old store-bought corn, tomatoes, the difference between lightning and a lightning bug, the difference between Beyonce and Bounce fabric softener, it's difference between filet mignon and fried melon. It's just a huge difference. What a privilege. How lucky we are. And now we come into fall and everything changes. That exquisite boredom of summer is now passing from us. This is the boredom that the internet was developed to extinguish from the world, you see. The internet gives you something to look at, listen to every single minute of your waking life, all night and all day. That's the beauty of the internet, is it holds away that boredom that I grew up with as a child, sitting around in a porch just watching flies, watching the Mississippi River go by. You sat under a cottonwood tree in the shade and you tossed stones in, you skipped them, you floated sticks by, you bombarded them with stones, you sat there by the river. But now you've got the internet, which brings to the home the adult bookstore, the beauty shop, the men's locker room, all the ne'er-do-wells in the world you can hang out with and nobody needs to know a thing about it, thanks to the WWW world. We didn't used to have this. We used to be connoisseurs of boredom, and we would sit on a summer day under that cottonwood tree and we'd talk about if you dug a hole straight through to China, what would they say when you came out? Would they be happy? Would they be afraid? What would happen? What if the communists took over America and they lined up everybody in town and they made you take a choice between renouncing the Lord our Savior or drinking a cup of dog spit? Which would you do? You got to do one or the other. There's no other answer. I said, well, how would you collect a cup of spit from a dog? Well, just never mind, they said, never mind. What would you choose? I said, I would renounce the Lord with my fingers crossed. That doesn't count. They said, you are an atheist. You are an atheist. That's how we spent our summers back in the old days. And then came Labor Day weekend and the shade of responsibility fell on us, and we went off to school to try to make something of ourselves, to be somebody, learn something. Don't be a $2 haircut on a 29-cent head. Make something of yourself, because life passes so swiftly. if you don't seize this opportunity, it'll be lost. It sort of underlined that this last week when the tractor pulled into town, pulling a wagon that was loaded with black dirt, and on top of the dirt was a plain pine coffin. It pulled up in front of the Lutheran church where a crowd of people was waiting for it, and where six men reached up and slid it down off the mound of dirt, and they carried it into the church. That was Roger Hedlund's, Alice Chalmers' tractor, and that was his wagon, and it was black dirt from his field, and it was his body inside the coffin. He died on that tractor. He was out in his field, and he was cutting corn stalks to make silage, and he was going over that slight rise that comes to where the brook is when there is a brook, and back where that line of trees is, the windbreak trees, and he was going that way, and then he stopped, and he got out of the tractor, got down, and he leaned up against the big tractor wheel, and he died right there. He didn't even turn off the tractor. Somebody drove by once and came back and drove by again, and then a third time, and then they went up and they found him. He was 74 years old. He was farming 340 acres that had been left to him by his father, Walt, who had gotten them from his father, Ivan, who'd come over from Sweden. The Hedlunds were Swedes. He farmed corn and soybeans, mostly, though he had farmed dairy cattle sometime in the past, but he gave it up because he wanted to sleep late. He mowed the lawn at the Lutheran church because the boy who had been mowing it wasn't mowing it as well as Roger thought it should be mowed. He and Cindy had two daughters, Kathy and Martha, who went away. They were good kids. They were hardworking young women. And like so many kids who turn out well, you don't see them afterwards. They disappear. One went to Seattle and one went to Austin, Texas. They had children, 3, 4 children each. And the children were tremendously busy, as children are nowadays, and so Roger and Cindy didn't see much of their descendants. They took a vacation 2 years ago off to Napa Valley, thinking they would try to put their marriage back together. They hadn't talked much since the girls had grown up. But they weren't really divided. They just were two separate people, completely different, who lived under one roof. Roger's interest was family history. His grandfather, Ivan, had fired the last shot in the First World War. The armistice went into effect at 11 o'clock on the 11th of November, and Ivan fired his shot at 11:54. He was in the wrong time zone. He fired at a man he thought was a German sniper, and it turned out to be a French postman on a bicycle. And he missed, and he was grateful for the rest of his life that he was a bad shot. Roger was the only one who was interested in this. He told this story over and over, and when people saw him get on the subject of the First World War, they would head for the exits. He was a good man. He kept his own counsel. He was a Swede, and in a town of Norwegians, Swedes generally feel superior, but he was preserved from arrogance by the fact that it was Roger who missed the free throw with 2 seconds left in the District 16 championship game against St. Francis in 1958. He took the crucial free throw, and it hit the front of the rim, and it made a dull metallic sound, and it bounced back into his hands. And everybody, all of us Lake Wobegon fans, our hearts stopped, and we knew that our lives would never be the same. We should have won. They were inferior to us. They were a team of gangly farm boys, and we had lost. How could it happen? We were weeping. We went back to the bus. There was a boy up in the bleachers who, just as Roger was set to push the ball, that boy in the silence said, "Ha, And I think Roger heard it. And when he heard it, he realized the futility of this shot. And so he missed it, the shot that would stay with him for the rest of his life. It made him kinder, having failed in public, having embarrassed himself and suffered so. It made him a kinder person. And that's what Pastor Liz said in the sermon at the funeral. She was in town. She'd come back from Rome. She had come back to visit Marlene, the church secretary, and she was staying up at Marlene's lake cabin, and she heard that Roger had died. And she went up to the Headland house, and she went in, and she took Cindy's hands in hers. Cindy, who kept saying over and over, "We had tickets to go to San Francisco in October." Over and over, she called the girls. They came out from Seattle and Austin. They came and they brought their children. The church ladies made a wonderful lunch and they served it there at the farmhouse after Roger had been buried in his own black dirt that was put in the grave. Wonderful lunch of ham salad sandwiches and pickles, beautiful pickles. The children, the grandchildren, didn't know what to do. They had been told not to open their smartphones or their tablets, and so they did not. Cindy led them on a tour of the barns and the milking parlors and the corn crib and the silo and the deep well where the milk cans used to be stored, and she showed them the harness that the horses used to wear. They looked at it politely, but they could not understand how anybody could have lived like this, how anybody could have lived this primitive life with a wood-burning stove and a kerosene lantern. They just couldn't understand it. Well, children, I am as devoted to my computer as anybody here, but I remember very little of anything I've ever found on the computer, whereas I do remember what it was like to ride on a tractor pulling a hay baler and to lift hay bales onto a hay rack that was pulled by two Belgian horses. You remember actual experiences, things you read on a screen, not so much. And so, when Roger was driving his tractor across the cornfield and chopping corn stalks, he was living in memory. He was having an experience that was deep in his memory. He was doing something that Walt did before him and Ivan did before him. He was smelling the same smells. He was experiencing all of it. And then life ended, and then he became part of our memory, especially those of us who were his age and who were there at that game in 1958 and who held our breath when he stood at the free throw line. Now, one man going down in the ranks, and it's shocking to us, but in a good way, because everything that happens after you hear about the death of a good close friend, the world becomes even more alive to you. You stand on Main Street and you see a kid walking into Skoglund's Five and Dime to buy yellow pencils. And just this simple thing, a child handing over a couple dollars to get some number two yellow Eagle pencils, you can smell the graphite, you can smell the wood shavings. It almost brings you to tears. You see Daryl Tollerud pull out of town in his Ford station wagon with his youngest daughter in the passenger seat and the back seat full of her stuff, heading off to St. Olaf College. It tugs at your heart. It means more to you now, this fall day. You can see her face in the side view mirror, and she is not looking back. She is looking off down the road. The mist on the lake and the smoke in the woods and the smell of apples and leather of fall is a powerful, powerful thing to a man whose old classmate has just collapsed of a heart attack. You feel the preciousness of life. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, all the children are above average.